Hi, and welcome to Let's Look. My name's Emily Van Meter, and today we're revisiting Katie Short to find out more about her artistic practice. Enjoy!
And I know that we talked some about installation last time, and I had a specific question about your body of work, Burnouts, and Everything We Know. So you present a lot of that work in, like, on these staggered podiums. And I was wondering if that had conceptual background to it and why you chose to present them like that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it relates to fragility. So these are super fragile objects. And so there's something really dangerous about putting them on, like, narrow, tall posts. And that's really appealing to me. There's this, like, okay, you have to be careful, right? And a lot of, especially Everything We Know, you know, for me at the time, it was a lot about figuring out how to recover. So how to make something new out of things that are broken. And so I wanted it to be displayed in a way that was kind of dangerous, which I think, you know, when I think about these objects and I think about recovery and, you know, how it relates to us as human beings and how we, our paradigms shift and we have to remake ourselves, there's a danger in our lives. So I want that danger to be in the work. There's also something, you know, the different levels. So for each of them, it's a little different, but in both Burnouts and Everything We Knew. But what is the same is what I mentioned before about wanting to draw people in rather than confronting them with this giant thing that's in your face. Putting things at different levels means that people might have to bend down to look at it. I want to ask people to kind of engage with it by making them curious. And, like, I love to see people, like, crouching down to look at something closer. So I think there's that. And there's something about that too, that, like, in my process of making, it's in the beginning, at least, it's, like, really childlike and curious. So I kind of want people to have to meet me on that level at some point when they're looking at my work. Or I want to see people, like, you know, when we think of adults, it's like, okay, standing or sitting or being professional, but, like, to crouch down is something that, like, kids do all the time without thinking, like looking at the bugs on the ground or whatever. So that's kind of where it comes from. In particular, everything we know or knew was, you know, it was very intentional, kind of oval shape that slanted into the ground. And that, you know, the process of thinking through that piece, and really that whole body of work that I was making during grad school, especially, I was thinking about still lifes and the tabletop and how people come around the table. So at the time, I also had another piece called Tipped Table that was, like, pieces shooting out from the wall on these table legs. But for me, that oval and, like, the slantedness of it was just a kind of another abstracted table kind of form.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I guess I hadn't thought about it, the fragility aspect of it, you know, because I was just seeing pictures, but I'm sure that really comes through when seeing it in person.
Yeah, well, and it was, like, logistically, it was difficult to, because if you have people walking around a piece, like, they really, all of those, if you bumped into it, like, maybe not just, like, brushing against it, but, like, they would fall over, you know? So I had to, in both cases, I had to come up with ways that, like, the posts and Everything We Know, there's an internal structure that is fixed to the ground and shoots up inside this hollow form. So there was a lot of it. And that part, like, so that's the thing about my practice, is that there is part of it that needs to be playful and spontaneous, and then there's a part that just needs to be almost administrative and logistical, like, okay, let's solve this problem. And so it's a back and forth between playful and, like, very adult and left trained.
Yeah. So who are some artists that inspire your work?
Yeah. Okay. So really the earliest memory I have of like a love of art was the Salvador Dali poster in my my art class as like a second grader. I find him quite problematic now as a human being, but you know that there is this, for me, surrealism is such a draw just at a gut level, and that matters to me. Like, there's a lot of art. When I walk through the Art Institute of Chicago, there's a lot of art that, like, really, on a gut level, I could, like, whatever. Like, I know why it's important, and I could talk about it all day, and I believe in it culturally. I'm glad they did that, but, like, I don't care about that work. But when I look at surrealism and like the images draw me in, and even I've always been fascinated with like dreams, and just how your mind creates this thing that's an abstraction of our lives. So, you know, surrealism is a big thing for me. And then, you know, as I got into undergrad and I started looking more at contemporary artists, like, I love people who are really working with materials in a certain way. So Andy Goldsworthy, totally fascinating to me. Just the hands-on nature, and there's a kind of struggle aspect to his work, and it's very directly involved with these materials, and beautiful. Honestly, the beauty does matter to me. And I don't want to make something that's just beautiful. I want it to have depth, and a kind of importance of like, okay, what is this material I'm using? But again, it's that idea of I want to draw people in. And I think that at some point I kind of made this full circle by realizing that like that's what I can do that still relates back to surrealism, is showing people something that they think they know in a new way, and drawing them in maybe with weirdness or beauty, but getting them to think, and really finding those metaphors of materials that play out throughout our lives and in our relationships. Another artist that I really love, whose work is very different than mine, but I love him anyway, is Robert Gober. So I love Robert Gober for the symbolism that he uses, and he repeatedly uses, I don't know if you're familiar with his work at all, but yeah, like when he takes like the series of sinks and he'll show you a sink in this way, and then he like warps it out to the side, and it's like he is playing with just, okay, let me tweak this. And then, oh, all of a sudden there's like a little girl's leg coming out of a sink. And then there's a little girl's leg in this another situation. So I think that's sort of, I feel like his practice is a really good map for how to be playful in your own practice and how to create artwork from your artwork and be inspired by yourself and the things that interest you. So actually, and then like in my work, the first time I ever worked with a light bulb was in Everything We Knew. And then I was like, wow, that's an amazing symbol. And I, you know, it's like that became the subject itself and could expand out in its own way. And it is like a sort of a process of let's just tweak one part at a time, and see what happens. And some of the threads go nowhere and some of them continue on.
Yeah, for sure. I'm also really interested, you talked some, so you're like, you're very interested in this like surrealism and this fantastical world, but then you also mentioned in our last interview about how it's like science magic, right? So when I was on your website, I saw you use the phrase alchemical process. Yeah. So I'm wondering like about that and what goes into making these pieces like process wise?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so for me, I'm using that term because, like, alchemy is, like, this, like, pseudoscience slash spiritual practice thing. And for me, a lot of that, it relates back to the curiosity. And, like, I'm not being a scientist, per se, but I'm discovering things all the time. And I am thinking about, like, okay, if I want to discover more about this material, I don't change everything about what I'm doing to it at once. So there is, like, a method. And then in the reflection of like what happens with these materials and what I do with them, there's something kind of spiritual, about that. So that's kind of how I think through it in my mind. So I feel like it depends. I mean, I find objects a lot of times. Actually, somebody just gifted me like 50 light bulbs. So like there's like the finding of something that I want to work with. And at this point, like it's less spontaneous because I know I'm going to work in this process for a little while. But it used to be that I would like, I don't know, find random shoes in the alley and I'd be like, I'm going to keep this in the studio and see if it becomes something. So there's like these chance kind of meetings and this playfulness and being in spaces and being with people. You know, and then there's the time in the studio where I'm like, okay, well, what's interesting about this? Like, why does this object appeal to me? What is it about it? And then how does it interact? You know, my background is in ceramics and sculpture. So, you know, and then with the light bulbs, I expose them to heat. So I put them in a kiln and I follow a firing temperature that I actually developed based on like YouTube videos of very crafty ladies making cheese dishes out of wine bottles, which I thought like is the most boring thing you can do. But it's a really like kudos to them for like making a process out of it. They're happy making cheese dishes, great. But some of the processes actually also apply to other, you know, other objects. So for me, I follow like a firing temperature that I now have really honed based on how I know light bulbs have reacted or different kinds of like glass vessels that I might put in there. Like I understand that old glass I get from a thrift store that has, you know, like lead in it is going to melt differently and have these different qualities than like something that's like really cheap from IKEA. And that's because I've just done it hundreds of times at this point. So there's like the firing and like the destruction of something. And then, you know, and then I have this glass thing. And sometimes, you know, sometimes exactly what I think is going to happen happens. And then other times it's a little different. Or maybe like even with the light bulbs, some of them puff up and become like these balloon type, really fragile, thin forms. And some of them get really flat. So like even that part is different. But I then have these objects that aren't like they're not art to me yet, right? They're still like in the material phase, and they need something else. And I often have like I think I probably have, I don't know, 32 melted light bulbs at this point that need something else. They need the rest of their body to be built. And at this point for the light bulbs, I know what that is. Or I know it's at this point it's probably going to be resin or rubber. Maybe something else will come in. But those are kind of my two materials of interest right now with those. But there's like, okay, figuring out the structure of how it goes together and then how they are grouped together. The burnouts in particular, they're kind of made to have a life. I'm still figuring these out, but like from the time that this person who just gave me all these light bulbs, from the time that she gave me those light bulbs, I had entered them into a spreadsheet and put down, she was like, okay, these are all from, because they all have a specific like ID number and the zip code they're from as part of that. So like they all have a zip code ID number now. And then they will get a new number once they are go into the kiln. And then once they get a body, they'll get a new ID number. So like their code gets longer and longer. And then in various installations, it's like they'll be grouped in cohorts again. So that's like, which is like the most administrative. I've never done a body of work that has been this like process oriented. But that's, for me, this has been about creating identities for these objects. So, yeah, I guess that's the current body of work, but there's a lot of back and forth between, well, let's treat this light bulb like a toy and see how it fits with something else or another object. There was a while when I was like, I found a broken bowling ball on the side of the street, like shattered bowling ball. And I just collected it because how did this happen? Like what that that has lived an entire life, and it felt like a mythical object to me already. Like, it was, it actually, that kind of felt finished. I think I have it in a box somewhere, and I couldn't do anything to it because that's, like, complete. It was, like, next to a grocery store, so I think somebody had chucked it against the wall, and it had shattered. But still, that in and of itself was just, like, that's, that piece is probably complete, along with a number of objects that, like, also have clear stories. But yeah, it's like the life cycle of things and figuring out, is this a full piece of art yet, or does this go with other pieces or other parts?
Do you find yourself personifying a lot of things, like, within your day-to-day life?
Yes. Yeah. There's, and I, maybe I've gotten a little bit better about this now, but, you know, it's like my studio is often very messy, and it's like when I start, like, bumping into things or breaking things or whatever, then I'm like, okay, I need to clean, I need to, but I had, there's actually something called, it's called resistentialism, which I discovered because sometimes I just felt like, oh my word, objects are against me. Like, they are willfully against me. Look it up. There's a Wikipedia page for it. But it's like, sometimes, like, that's, yeah, I just felt so much like, okay, these, and especially that's how I started working on recovering broken objects, because there was so much of that in my practice. And that became just the thing in and of itself. And I just think, like, that also goes back to surrealism, sort of, this, like, and the connection between seeing materials change and seeing our lives change and seeing the way we think as individuals change. That, like, psychologically and just as, like, a self-reflection tool became something for me.
Yeah, and so you've been taught, you know, you said that you find a lot of these items, right? Would you say that that is your version of research, or is there, like, research on top of that as well?
Okay, so there's different, that's like my most prevalent, like, that's like sketching to me, right? Like, walking is sketching, you know, sometimes writing is sketching, which is a kind, can be a kind of research for sure. Then there's, for me, there's like the kind of research that's like, how, especially in sculpture or ceramics, so many technical processes. So there's that. And you can be inspired by, like, wow, it's crazy that metal does this, you know? Or, like, the other thing that's important to my work is, since it's, like, materials, like, things that happen in nature. You know, there are a lot of artists now also that are, like, suspending things in the ocean for a month at a time and pulling them out and seeing, you know, the collection of salt and barnacles. So those kind of processes, like that kind of research to me is really either to actually do the experiment, or to look up, like, well, what happens when something, like, you know, sometimes I'll do, like, one thing I want to do soon is, you know, make like a pinch pot and put it in the freezer while it's still really wet, and then pull it back out of the freezer. I'm sure somebody online could tell me what will happen, because it will, like, mess up, because the, it, like, the water in it will expand, and then it might, like, kind of collapse before, I don't, like, the drying and the freezing at the same time sounds really cool. So, like, sometimes I, like, but I don't want to ask Google what happens. I'm just curious about that. It just sounds fun. So there's things like that. You know, and then the other part of research that I actually now in my 30s, I think I am really wanting to expand, is this, like, relational kind of research. Like, actually what you're doing now, you're interviewing me. And I think it's really smart, because we connect with people and we learn a lot about our lives. I did a piece that was a family portrait for one of my friends, and part of it was asking him a series of questions about his family and then coming up with, okay, what are the objects that are involved in these pieces, and then how do they need to be transformed to become this sculpture? and what position are they put in based on the family dynamics. So that's like another kind of research that I'm interested in that involves getting to know people and thinking through how, like, family relationships and well, just whole family systems.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I've talked to a good amount of artists at this point, and I find that their research methods are always so different. And that's why I started including it, like, as a question, because I am interested in, you know, the connection with research. And another connector I'm just wondering about is, so if you were, we talked about your paintings a little bit in the last interview, if you were to create a timeline of your work, what would that look like, and how would it connect to place?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I'm trying to think about how far to go back, you know, because my work rapidly started to get more into sculpture and materiality very early on. So, you know, there's like this, like ramp somehow, like away from just drawing and painting and images and towards materiality that goes really steep. And that's when because that's the thing, is that the ideas and the materials, actually, I think I'm going in loops now. I'm like coming back around to things, because even by the time I was finishing undergrad in Detroit, I was walking around the city, picking up shattered windshields glass and, you know, putting it inside these vessels that were like spell jars that were like supposed to revitalize the city. And, you know, so I was doing collecting already, and I was already working with glass, and I was working with, you know, thinking about things that had been like destroyed in these horrible ways, but were also really beautiful. So like, I keep on hovering around these ideas, but bringing them back in new ways. My processes have changed significantly since then. And a lot of that relates to resources, right? And availability of like, okay, when I first started making work with glass, I was in an institution where I was doing some glass blowing, you know, and I was never a great glass blower, so I knew I wouldn't stick with that. But, you know, and then when I started doing more ceramics things, it centered around the kiln. And now the kiln is like, it's a big part of my process. And so actually the timeline probably actually follows very much around like the studio access that I have, and then the locations that I'm in. Like where I live now, I don't find very many broken windshields. that was very specific to Detroit. Like every other street, it was, at the time, you were finding all of this shattered glass, and I thought it was gorgeous, but it was also like, this is not good. So, I don't know. And how it relates to place, was that the other part of this question? Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, my materials are always going to change based on place, and the things that fascinate me. And cities definitely do as well. You know, I was thinking about when I was a little kid, I loved making miniature things and like little cities that I could peer into out of, I don't know, like leaves and sticks and weird little parts. But now, I mean, I do think that I love living in the city. And one of the reasons is that there are all these hidden places or places that I can partially see into, but there's like a mystery about what's inside, even with skyscrapers or different buildings around where I walk. So that actually is kind of a weird parallel between some of the work that I make, where I do want people to peer in and be like, what can I see? What can I not see? Especially in the pieces where things are like trapped inside of glass. So,
yeah, I know that you also mentioned that you lived in New York for a while. Do you think that, so going from like our go-to art city to like a Midwestern city such as Chicago, how did your work shift during that move?
Mm.
And the answer can be not actually, at all.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in New York for only probably like 7 months. So, you know, and it was during the middle of the time that I lived in Detroit. Then I lived in New York for about 6 months. Then I went back to Detroit. So I don't know that New York made a huge impact on my art other than I got to see a lot of shows. You know, it's very easy to see high caliber shows, and maybe more importantly, it's very easy to see very good galleries with crappy work in it. Like that's, I felt like that there, in some ways, it's like both frustrating and confidence building to see work in New York, because you realize that like you know, there's a lot of really good work, and then there's a lot of work you're like, I don't care about this. It's just being displayed in this way that is telling me that it's art, right? And that it's important. And who am I to say? But it's also you start to realize that you can contextualize your work. You can, if you make good choices about how you display and present your work, then you can look really professional. And there's a lot there about the difficulties in the art world too, but yeah.
Kind of along the lines of that question too. So what would you, I've become really interested in this idea of this triad that has person, place, and practice in it. And what lies in the middle of that triad for women artists, honestly. So if you, you know, are thinking about what that means to you and what lays in the middle of that person, place, and practice triad, what does that look like?
So, yeah, I would say that, I mean, the person and the place, those are a huge part of what the practice can be, right? So even as a woman in my practice, how safe I feel in my location also, like, affects, like, do I feel comfortable going out and just freely walking? And I do in my neighborhood. You know, there's like accesses to things. So you start to think about your life, like actually as a woman, I think it is like a solidly like middle class background woman. There's like the logistics of life that come into how I can have my practice, how I can make it work for me. And I have to make things flexible because I have to work and I have to have a space. So like who I am affects every aspect of like my practice, but also my practice then affects how I want to live my life for sure. And the place comes in, like when I'm thinking about like, where do I want to live right now? How do I live close enough to either a studio space or make it work in, you know, where I live right now? Like my studio space is behind me. This is the front room of my apartment building. So I have had like a separate studio space before, and there are like benefits of both. But, you know, there are, it's like when I think about, okay, what's next for me? Maybe I don't want to live here. It's also, where can I afford a studio space? How do I want it to be? And yeah, I guess that's like the access to things, just making it possible. Like sometimes that's the most practical thing you can do for yourself, to look at yourself as a human being and say, like, this matters to me. And it's like a puzzle to put together for yourself. So my art is like always in my thinking about the future, but I've come to be a lot more, kind to myself about how I live my life and like what my expectations are for how fast I get to where I want to be or, you know, how I need to do things to make it all work. Because there's also this like stereotype, I feel like, that's out there, like artists, like if they're happy, they can't make good work or whatever. I'm like, no, actually, like I've been really depressed and had, you know, it's not like that. Like I need to take care of myself first. So, and for being a woman, I think that's the other thing. A lot of times I feel like growing up, the statement was like, you can do anything, right? But the underlying thing that I think a lot of us feel is that you have to do everything. And that's just not possible, right? So you do have to make choices. And you have to be kind to yourself about the choices that you're making and be accountable for them, but respect why you're doing what you're doing, you know? It's hard to have a practice and have kids. It's hard to have kids and have a job. It's hard, you know, in my case, I don't have kids. I'm not planning on having kids. You know, but like, it's like all of those things, like as a human being, I just think like school leaves that out, art education leaves that out. And I think that the art world is a really privileged place. And I don't think we're having these conversations enough.
Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time on Let's Look.